Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 393 for comics originally released on February 18th, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Batman Superman number 19. This is the middle part of a story, and it's written by Greg Pak with Adrian Saif, maybe? I am butchering names, and I apologize. How would you pronounce that last name, Drew?
I'll be fine.
S-Y-A-F.
Yeah, Saif. I like that.
Saif. And again, I apologize for mispronouncing it. I really wish these things started to come with pronunciation guides. Particularly as we're starting to get more creators from, you know, around the world and stuff, which I think is kind of awesome. It has been ages since I've read kind of a Superman-Batman journey into Kandor kind of a storyline, or really a Superman and anybody journey into Kandor. When I was growing up, this was around the time that, you know, periodically they would have just some kind of story either about Kandor or in Kandor and stuff at the Fortress of Solitude. It was fun, you know, just the concept of all these little tiny miniature supermen and women, you know, around. I just thought it was cool. And I think they've downplayed that really over the last few, I'm going to go say decades. I'm not as young as I'd like to be. So getting kind of the new 52 background on, you know, Krypton, Kandor, how all that got set up, and then, you know, where we're at now, I appreciated that recap. Now, have you been following the series, or are you jumping on and off?
This is one of those that I jump on and off, and I've heard good things. I've heard it's kind of picked up lately, so mm-hmm. I was anxious to get back into it and check it out again and sample it again, and I'm glad I did. I thought this was a really good story.
Did you read the previous issue?
No.
Okay. If it is the comic I am thinking of, and maybe it is, maybe it isn't, they encountered essentially a smart bullet, which turned out to be a Kandorian. So, you know, somebody gets shot with this thing that's zipping around left, right, and center and stuff, and that's part of why we've got the Kandor stuff here. Or I am completely imagining that, which I may well have.
That makes sense.
But pulling in Ray Palmer and the Ant Farm and Shade and all that stuff just as a way to kind of, you know, examine Kandor and stuff, I thought was kind of cool. Good use of that. And it's one of those where they've got Lois Lane here, and I think they're still struggling as to how she fits into the Superman stuff in the new 52, since she and Superman don't have the classic relationship. I think what they did here works, but I don't know, it just felt a little, I will say off, a little not classic, not quite right. It worked, though. So
yeah, they booted her pretty quickly from the story, and mm-hmm. I just assumed that maybe she had a bigger role in the previous issue.
I think she did. Again, I'm reading enough stuff that I'd have to, frankly, go reread the issue to remember. That was the one thing about this issue I would have... I think you can understand this, and correct me if I'm wrong, without having read the previous parts of the story?
Yeah, I think so. It worked for me.
Did you have enough context?
I think so. If there's a test later and I don't do well, then I guess not. But I enjoyed the story, and I was able to grasp, you know, what was going on, and kind of see who the new players are, and it felt like a really cool adventure that these guys were on.
I mean, I felt like they didn't really reset the scene at the beginning of this. I think they gave it, it's nice because it's part of a continuing story, but they gave it essentially an opening for a new reader to it's like, boom, here's the backstory on Kandor. Here's what's going on. Let's get going and not really make too much of a big deal about, yeah, you're in the middle of a story. But I'm willing to bet if somebody reads this in trade, they may get to the point where it feels like the story almost stops for a moment to start up here again, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I guess so.
So I'm wondering if when somebody reads it in trade, how this plays for them versus how it plays here. I liked what they did, but I would not have complained if they'd given me a little bit more of a recap of the previous issue. Just, oh yeah, that's where we're at in this title. Because between Superman, Action, Batman, Superman, Superman, Wonder Woman, you know, plus all the other places Superman is showing up, such as Justice League, Injustice, you know, Earth 2 and various places, it, frankly, it does get a little hard to keep some of the straight for me.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of variations of a couple of these characters throughout the universe and so and universes. So, yeah, it's tough to keep them all straight.
Mm-hmm. I did really enjoy, though, when about halfway through we got kind of the other retelling of historic events, almost the evil propaganda version. And Superman's like, no, that's not how it happened. You know, particularly given they'd given kind of the real history at the beginning, it made that play well.
Yeah.
If those two histories had been split across issues, enough time would have elapsed that it would not have played as well for me. They kind of waver a little as to they've got a heavier gravity in Kandor, but I guess they've got... Do they establish that they've got a red sun here? That's why they don't have powers? Or how did that work out?
Yeah, I think it was something like that because, you know, and there's some atmospheric things that would play havoc on everybody else except for Batman because of his suit and, of course, Supergirl and Superman because of their powers. So I don't think their powers go away completely. But, yeah, the gravity changes and there's extra pressure on Batman's exo-armor.
Rereading the beginning of it, it does flat out state the bottle reproduces Kryptonian conditions, which is why Lois can't go.
Yeah.
But Batman can because, well, he's Batman. In classic Kandor of ages gone by, it had a red sun and stuff, so everyone going in was powerless. And this led to the Nightwing and Flamebird, Batman and Robin type characters there, of which there were a few different variations and whatnot. So this is, you know, a different twist on Kandor and allows, you know, some really fun story possibilities they didn't have before. But yeah, overall, I thought this was a lot of fun. It was a good issue, and I thought it ended on a strong note that makes me want to get that next issue and get more of the story.
Yep, I agree with you. I really thought the art was strong, and I thought the story was worked well for me, especially coming in cold like this. After a bit of a gap from the last one, I probably haven't read it since the single digits. And so it was a long hiatus for me. And, you know, there was enough recap there for me to get a nice on-ramp onto the story. I liked it. I look forward to the next installment. And so I gave it a strong B.
Cool. So just a regular B, though.
Not just a regular old B.
But a strong regular old B.
Yeah. Okay. Almost a B plus.
For me, it got a B minus. It, again, not really getting me back to where the story left off, frustrated me a little. But overall, it was a lot of fun. This title, I think, has picked up, is worth checking out and stuff. So definitely recommend that.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Silk number one. This is, arguably spinning out of the pages of Spider-Verse. I would say it's really spinning out of Amazing Spider-Man. The basic premise here is this is a new character. Cindy Moon was bitten by the same spider that bit Peter Parker, turning him into Spider-Man. She, though, went into a bunker and into seclusion for quite some time, came out, and that's what kicked off the Spider-Verse. And now she's having her own adventures. We've got Robbie Thompson as the writer and Stacy Lee as the artist. Over the years, they have had tons of female characters based on Spider-Man. Frankly, I think this one's a lot more promising than most of them. And I think this issue, I mean, she's been around for about a year or so now. This issue did a great job setting up her status quo, who she is, her long-term goal of finding her family and stuff, and I think is very accessible to new readers. And I also think this is almost the epitome of a great all-ages comic that can bring in a new group of readers. I mean, it reads great from my perspective as a longtime comic book reader, a longtime Spider-Man fan. But I think it would also work well for new comic book readers, younger readers, female readers. And I think there's an aspect of the art and just the style of the story that is welcoming. It is easy to kind of get into. And again, I think it's something that serves a very broad and wide audience without kind of disregarding existing fans or anything like that. So I was really pleased with that aspect of this issue.
Yeah, I thought it worked well. And yeah, it feels very rooted in Spider-Man's story and kind of the steps that he took early on. And, you know, you kind of felt the connection with J. Jonah Jameson and how she was going to, you know, make her money working for him. And it was very similar in fashion to kind of Peter Parker's. And then I kind of liked when she was in the bunker and pasting things on the wall, a la like a crime drama trying to solve this mystery. And we kind of saw that in the rebooted movie with the Andrew Garfield version of Spider-Man, where he did that in that first version and kind of had set up something like that on his wall of his room. And I thought that was kind of an interesting, I don't know if it was an homage or just a, you know, you see that a lot. So it could have been inspired by a lot of different things, but I liked it. I liked that story beat. I thought that was cool. There's a lot of stuff in here to like. A little bit of her dialogue early on, I found a bit annoying, where she kept mentioning Pokemon and asking for a friend. And I don't know if that's a catchphrase or something that I just don't get, but I found it kind of silly. And they went back to that well a couple too many times, I think. But then it grew and it got a little stronger as it went on. I thought that the dialogue worked a little better the further into the story I went. And by the end of it, I was really enjoying it. I thought it was a fun story and I was really happy because I was concerned it was going to go kind of off the rails the way Spider-Woman did. And this was much, much stronger.
Yeah, I think it was definitely much stronger. I liked how Spider-Man was in this. I mean, he's definitely a large part of her story, but I also liked how he was used very much as a supporting character, not the star, not even really as a guest star, but somebody who's going to come around often. But again, just as I'm trying to think what would be a good example in another book, not quite the Alfred character in Batman, but you know what I mean? We're going to see a lot of him, but it'll be more than a cameo, less than a guest star kind of a deal.
Maybe if Alfred and Bruce Wayne had an unrequited love and attraction that they couldn't explain away, then it would be similar. But otherwise, I don't see it.
Well, I'm thinking more along the lines of somebody who, it's not like, you know, when Iron Man or like Hawkeye guest stars in Captain America or vice versa.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like Daredevil currently showing up in Superior Iron Man. Where it's like they do the story, boom, that's it, that's over. I expect Spider-Man to be a permanent part of this book to some degree. He'll fade in a little bit more at times, fade out at times or whatever, but he's always going to be part of her story. He can't not be. And the relationship stuff, the origin stuff, all of that really plays into that.
Yeah, I'm interested a little bit in the will they or won't they aspect of those two characters and how long they're going to dodge that. Whether they're going to address it, sweep it under the rug. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what I want them to do, and I'm not sure what's going to work best long term. That's kind of an interesting subplot that I want to pay attention to.
I'm kind of wanting them to address the romance aspect within the first year or so and then move past it. I think these two, if they can get past the chemistry stuff that they've set up in Amazing Spider-Man, and just get to where they are, you know, best friends, you know, they have each other's back or whatever. There's somebody they can turn to or whatever. Because that's one of the things I think Spider-Man has really needed, is somebody who understands what he's going through. She hopefully will over time or whatever. And it seems like she could use that sort of a thing too. And I think there's a lot more long-term potential there, storytelling-wise, than just is she the girlfriend, you know, at the moment or not. Because, again, Spider-Man's had a number of them, and most of them haven't, you know, survived all that well.
Yeah, but sometimes their relationship was portrayed as it was almost uncontrollable, the attraction they had, and they couldn't fight it. They couldn't stop themselves. And it was much more or less so now in this issue. And so I'm wondering how that relationship's going to evolve. Is it going to go back to that, or is that going to be saved for the main title, and maybe not addressed as much in here. I'm just curious to where it goes.
Well, and they also didn't spend all that much time together, and I think that was intentional on her part.
Yeah, there was a couple of times where she caught herself, you know, because there was still there.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had to say, oh, okay, I got to go.
So it's, you know, it's a fun take on the character. I like the art style. It's a little bit more comic strip-ish or cartoony or whatever than a typical comic, but I think in a way that really works. And I think a way that opens this up to a larger readership.
Yeah, and it's nice to see new characters being introduced into the big two. That doesn't happen as often. And this seems to me very much like a very successful new character introduction into the universe that could have some staying power.
I certainly hope so. I think this is a fun character. This is a fun book. I like how they now have, you know, a female lead spider character that I think has got potential. And, you know, she's Asian. I don't know if she's, you know, Korean, Japanese, Chinese. I forget which ethnicity.
Yeah, there's some Asian ethnicity there, yeah. But I am concerned that she, between her and Spider-Woman and Spider-Gwen, which is coming out soon, we're going to have some very similar characters. And I don't know if they're going to divide the marketplace or build upon each other. I mean, I'd hope that would be the case, but I'm concerned that they could get lost because they're three very similar characters and titles.
Three female Spider-Man-based characters in short, rapid succession, you know, short succession, whatever. You're right. I think there's a definite risk there. And not having seen Spider-Gwen yet, we get that next week. right now, this is the one I would root for. Because
yeah, definitely.
I think this is the most interesting.
Yes, definitely. So far, this is the most interesting, and I think Spider Gwen got hot really quickly, and I'm not sure if this was the creative team that was always scheduled for Silk. I'm not sure about that. I have to look that up because I don't think Spider Gwen was always going to be a title, was it?
I'm not sure about that, but I'm pretty sure this was the team that was solicited for Silk.
Oh, always was, huh?
I think okay. So.
Yeah. Well, they did a great job, and I was very impressed with this, and even having a little concern going in, I thought it was a really strong story, and in the end, I gave it an A-.
I can totally understand that. I gave it a solid A. I thought it was great. It's a lot of fun. I think it's something most people should be able to, you know, read and enjoy with, you know, no issues whatsoever. The one question I've got about the character, just because it's puzzling me a little. She was bitten by the same spider as Peter Parker. Got very similar powers. With one key difference.
Mm-hmm.
She's got organic web shooters, essentially, or silk creation, or whatever exactly her power in that respect is. Why does she have that and he doesn't?
Yeah, that's a major difference, yeah.
And not good, bad, or indifferent. It's just, why did the same spider... same kind of a, you know, thing work differently for them. And while she's not a scientist, Peter is, so I expect that to get dealt with at some point. But it also makes for a fun difference for her character, both from Spider-Man and from Spider-Gwen, Spider-Woman, Spider-Girl, Spider, you know, this, that, and the other.
Wasn't there a time period in Spider-Man, though, where he didn't have the shooters?
Yes.
And he had something else going on there?
He had the organic stuff, and that was retconned out with One More Day.
Yeah.
When his marriage went away, he flipped back to the web shooters.
Yeah. I've always been a fan of the web shooters. So
I think they make sense. They make sense for him, and it's a fun difference for her to have, particularly given her skill with her silk creation stuff. So I don't want them to change that, but I would like Peter to at least investigate the question as to why he doesn't have that. Is it just she's naturally better with this stuff? You know, I don't know. There seems like there's story potential there is all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
So fun stuff. Well worth checking that title out. I hope it catches on and finds an audience. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Sure.
This is Secret Identities #1 from Image Comics. Written by Jay Farber and Brian Joins.
Yeah.
And art by Ilias Kriazis. I'm having a hard time with artist names.
Yeah, man, that's fine. I mean, what are you going
to
do?
Apologize to the artist is what I'm going to do.
It's a complicated name.
First off, I'm a big fan of Jay Farber as writing. I don't know this other writer's work. I'd have to go look up what he's done. But I'll be honest, when I went into this, I'm thinking, you know, I wasn't really blown away by a few of the other things we've read recently from Image, specifically the They're Not Like Us. And I'm like, yeah, is this going to work? Is this going to be, you know, dissecting the superhero thing and deconstructing it in a way I don't like? Or, you know, what's going on? And, you know, then I'm flipping over. It's like, oh, it's by Jay Farber. He's done Noble Causes. He's done Dynamo 5. He did the Titans for a little bit. He's done a lot of stuff I've really liked. So that helped a lot. And this is straight up super heroics. And that's something Farber is great with. And he found a really good group of people to round out the creative team. And, you know, when this thing started in downtown Toronto, my first thought was very few comics are set in Toronto.
Yeah.
And my second thought is, you know, that's a shame. It's a fun town. It's a very interesting town. It's a very international town. And it's a really great big city outside of the U.S., yet right on the edge of the U.S., that I think is a great setting for this kind of a book. And then, of course, that first page we get with what is it, Crosswind or whatever. Just, yep, not quite time to join that fight yet. Really set his character up beautifully. So this book started on a strong note, got to that double page splash, and really, I don't think, let up at all during the issue. I think they did a good job setting up the world, the characters, the status quo for the team, the basic threat, pretty much everything you can ask for out of a first issue to give you the information you need to determine, do you want to stay with this or not? Now, I'll admit, when I got to the reveal at the end, I had to flip back through the issue to really kind of understand it, but everything I needed was in this issue. And, you know, that's one of the great things about first issues. It's not like they can use, well, true first issues versus first volumes of future, or first issues of future volumes, if you know what I mean, or later volumes. I thought this was a lot of fun, a very interesting kind of a take on a Justice League Avengers-ish team. What were your thoughts on the book?
Slightly less than yours. I didn't like the way it began. It felt really exposition heavy at the beginning, and, you know, everybody is introducing each other during the battle and kind of spelling out everybody's powers and backstories while they're going back and forth. And I kept, you know, kind of hearkening back to, well, Astro City wouldn't do it this way. Well, you know, Astro City would introduce and maybe just focus on one person, and they wouldn't do it. You know, he wouldn't do it this way. And I kept comparing this back to an Astro City as the, kind of the ideal version of this, of a story like this.
Okay. I can see that.
And this just, you know, every single character we got a couple pages on, you know, and we it seemed, you know, we've spent a little time with them and got what makes them tick and who they are, what their character, if they're a good guy or a bad guy, and just their backstory. And it seemed like a lot to me. Too much.
I was gonna say, you say that like it's a bad thing, but I thought it was a good thing. And for me here,
yeah, I thought it was too much. The too many characters to juggle, to try to keep straight who's who. And you know, we spent, it just seemed like, you know, okay, now let's look at this character. Okay, let's have him interact with somebody so you know what kind of person that person is. Okay, this guy's got another family on the other coast. We'll show you what he's all about. And it just crammed way too much into this. It felt a little bit like Super, where there was way too much going on. They needed to pare it down. They needed an editor.
Mm-hmm.
I felt the same way about this.
Interesting.
And at the end of the day, we got through it. And, you know, there's a mole on this team that's propelling us into the next, mm-hmm. into the rest of the storyline. And that should be enough, but it wasn't for me. And I didn't like that character at all. And he just, not that he was just because he's a bad guy, but I just didn't like the way he acted.
He was overplayed a little.
Yeah, he was chewing scenery, I felt, you know. He was a little too super villainy, when, you know, when he was behind the scenes. And yeah, most of it didn't work, and it fell flat for me. They tried to do a lot here, though. Crammed a lot of stuff in there. It just didn't hit the right notes for me.
That's too bad. I appreciated what all they tried to do and what all they accomplished in this issue. There were one or two things that I thought could have and should have been clearer. particularly some aspects of the punchline character. Because throughout the entire first scene, I'm thinking it's a guy, but based on some of the stuff and the few pages we get on punchline, I think it's a girl.
Yeah, yeah, but you don't really figure that out until she does stand up.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I should have picked that up, I guess, somewhere along the line.
I actually went back and was reading through all that exposition in the dialogue during the fight to see if they ever referred to punchline as a he or a she or anything like that, as if there was any good clues for me to pick it up. And there wasn't. You know, and that's fine. I think that was intentional. But, you know, setting up a team of, what, 7 or 8 characters, you know, does take some exposition. And frankly, they set most of those characters up within the first 4 or 5 pages. To me, that's impressive. Can it be overwhelming? Yeah, totally.
Well, especially when the president's daughter is woven in there. And that was kind of interesting. And then his chief of staff is trying to get them to relocate the home base to U.S. soil.
Once we start getting to the 2 or 3 page scenes or whatever, that, you know, it's okay, boom, instant, you know, what's their secret identity aspect, which again is part of the book. I thought with Luminary, with her being the daughter of the president, okay, little, I don't want to say forced or cliche or whatever, it just, I don't know, it seemed not over the top, but you know what I'm trying to get to, you know what I mean? It's very bullet item. She's the daughter of the president. Well, what else do we know? She's the daughter of the president. Okay, I got that. What else? You know, it seemed to be what she was, not who she was.
I thought there was a lot of that where they just laid it out. This is what this character is going to be, and there's no real mystery there. Here's everything you know, except for Vesuvius. I thought he was the one character that, you know, they didn't reveal a lot. We had one interaction with this professor.
I thought it was very telling, though.
It was very telling, but
he is very much trying to hide his past.
He doesn't want to know the secret of who he is, either because he knows or because he just doesn't want to know. But they didn't spell it out, and you know, and in the, you know, like they did with the cyborg type character, who's just kind of, you know, laying out his whole history in a conversation with his friend at the dinner table, like they don't know each other,
mm-hmm.
but he's just reliving all his plot points.
The question I've got on one of these characters for you is Rundown, the speedster with the two families.
Yeah, that one caught me off guard. I didn't think he had a second family.
Did it not seem like he was very much not in favor of the Halifax family so much as the San Diego one? He's lying to the one family. Oh, I gotta go. I can't stay. Whatever. And seems, you know, much more excited about the San Diego one, which, yeah, given younger daughters there, seemed to be the newer family.
Yeah, it did seem like, yeah, he, you know, I don't know. We didn't spend that much time and it seemed like he had already been entrenched on that coast previous to, and just booked out for the production on the West Coast.
Kind of like he's alternating weeks or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
It may be, but it felt like he was literally running away from the one family to go spend time with the other. And they could have flipped the two families and I'd have, you know what I mean, felt the same way almost.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know if there's a preference there or he's torn.
I don't know. It
poor choice.
There was something about the way it was presented that biased me towards him liking the San Diego one more. Whether that remains the case, don't know. I expect those two families to encounter each other at some point because that would be, you know, his worlds colliding or something.
Yeah, I think there's definitely more stressors on the first family.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like their relationship is more strained than the other family, but we only got a couple panels of them where we got a little bit more with the first family.
Well, and in every case in the two pages, it's essentially get a look at kind of what these people are like when they're not with the team and what's their hidden secret, their, you know, a sort of Democles hanging over them that's going to cause them problems down the line. You know, kind of what's the equivalent of the Peter Parker, oh, Aunt May's always dying, or he can't pay the rent, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That kind of aspect. Which, you know, on the one hand, was cool and was fun. On the other hand, how much of this book is going to be about that kind of stuff? How much of it's going to be about the team? Not entirely sure yet. But
I mean, did you need to know all the backstory about every single member of the team in this first issue?
I don't think we got all the backstory. I think we got enough to get the flavor of it. I think we got far from all of it. But I felt there's enough questions, really, even on the what are their powers and what are they like as heroes side of it. And then when you get the couple, the 2 pages per, it's like, okay, they're setting some stuff up, but what's going on here? Any one of these, I think they could have basically said, okay, let's start with that opening of the team and so forth. Hey, Crosswind, you want to join? And then instead of going page by, you know, character by character, they could have just picked one and gone with that full blown.
Yeah.
But I think they're trying to tell parallel stories with all of these characters moving forward, or hopefully more in a round robin fashion. If they try to go 2 pages per every time, man, that would have too much in play, too slow movement on any of them, and cause, I think, a not so great reading experience.
Yeah, I think they're probably just a sampler platter here. Here's your main characters.
Get to know the team. Yeah.
Yeah, enough to get to know them, and then more to come later as the stories unfold. We'll focus. But yeah, I just didn't think it worked very well. A little heavy-handed for me. And but there's some interesting stuff in there. But I think especially folks that like that sort of thing should check it out for themselves. But for me, it just didn't do it. So it was a C-.
Really? Wow. I like that sort of a thing. You know, I liked how much they tried to put in here. I liked how much world building they had. But I can definitely see where you're coming from on that kind of stuff. I mean, different things for different people. And yeah, there were some points where this was heavy on exposition. But for me, that kind of worked in so much as in the span of the 20 or however many pages it was, I felt it covered a lot of ground. So for me, A-. This thing shows a lot of potential. I'm glad Faerber's got another book out there, and I'm looking forward to seeing where this one goes. Now, I was out of the country on a trip, so I got only about half the books read that I got this week so far. It was a huge week for me. It was like almost 60 books or something. So I plowed through as many as I could. Man, there were a lot. We got new issue of Tooth and Claw. Still loving that book. I thought that was great.
Yeah, that was good.
Got another issue of Deathlock. That took a very interesting turn. I thought that was a lot of fun. Second issue of Ivar. That was a blast. Really enjoyed that. Second issue of Ninth Generation or IX Generation. Did you decide to stay with that, or did you get off that one?
Oh, jumped. Jump ship.
All right. Finally got the last issue of MPH. I thought that ended in a fun way, but I think it would have worked better for me if there hadn't been some of the delays on that title.
Yeah. Is issue 5 just now coming out?
Yeah.
Wow.
It came out, and the order code on that was July 14 versus most everything else is like December.
Yeah.
So minor delay on that over the course of, you know, the series kind of sucks. And that's the sort of thing that just really drags the story momentum down. Now, one of the other ones I read and had high hopes for was issue 25 of Peanuts. And that's, Charlie Brown and the gang. This is the first issue they've done kind of an original story that's throughout the entire issue. You know, Charlie Brown going to summer camp and stuff. And I'll be honest, it fell kind of flat for me. I thought it was just average. I was hoping for more. It almost read like every page was kind of a, well, what if this was a Sunday comic, but just laid out in a comic book page? And it didn't meander, but it felt like it was just moseying along. I'm not expecting Charlie Brown to be tight storytelling, just packed with action and information. But I felt like at the end of it, I didn't really get much. And I've read some big collections of the Peanut stuff in the past when I was a kid, and it was just, there was more to it there, I thought, than I got in this issue. So, you know, hopefully other people like it more than I did, but it was a swing and a miss as far as I was concerned. But I appreciate them doing it nonetheless.
Yeah, that's too bad. Big used to love Charlie Brown books, man.
Did you read final issue of She-Hulk?
No, not yet. Looking forward to that.
They wrapped some stuff up there. That was interesting. And what else did I read? Fuse, some more Doctor Who, Batman and Robin. That was fun. I thought we got a really good issue of Avengers World. It's kind of a, not a done in one, but kind of a let's focus on these two characters for a little bit. And I thought it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So what'd you read?
A new Dark Horse book. It's called 8, number 1. It's EI and then the number 8, HT. And It's a time travel story by Raphael Albuquerque and Mike Johnson. And the they did the story together. Mike Johnson wrote the script, and then Albuquerque did the art.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a cool book from Dark Horse. It had an interesting color palette where the past has a green hue, the present has a purple hue, future is a blue hue, and there where it's melded into the present story, it's more orange. And I haven't quite figured out the delineation and some of the timelines. Just they're not distinct enough for me to quite grasp it.
Are things happening in different timelines? Are people moving between the timelines?
I think we're moving back and forth between the story, current and past and future, but they're kind of blending together. And you know, I'm able to follow it, but sometimes it shifts in color, and I think, oh wait, this is on the same page. Is this a jump to a different time, and I didn't pick it up? But I when I went through it a second time, I was like, oh, okay. Because his watch is green, and that's because it's in that time period, only he's still in the orange time period, which is the melded time. And it was kind of cool. By the time I got through it, I was kind of getting the gist of what was going on. And, it was fun little time travel thing that we're just scratching the surface of. And there's a lot more, to come in this. I don't know if this is a ongoing or a mini. But with Dark Horse, it could just go digital, right?
I hope not. Jeez.
Yeah. So,
well, in case our listeners don't know what you're referring to there, they're taking three titles that just started out in print and are essentially shifting them to digital first. Maybe they'll continue them in print at some point. Resurrectionists. What were the other two?
Can't remember off the top of my head. It's on the forum. Check out the forum.
It's on the forum. Yeah, there's a thread on that. I hope Dark Horse doesn't do that with other titles. Not a fan of them doing that with Resurrectionists. To me, it's just a variation on the whole abort to trade mentality. And if the sales aren't there, I get it, but man, that kind of sucks.
Yeah. There was a really cool Action Lab book that came out called Stray, written by Vito Del Sante with art by Sean Izoxy.
I have that on order. I have not gotten that yet.
I was kind of thinking of you when I read it, because it felt like that, was it the Fox that we read? Had that, was that Red Circle Comics, I think?
Yes.
It had that feel to it to me, and kind of a throwback superhero story, but it was really well done and worked really, really well as a debut issue, and I think you'll like it.
Good. Like I said, I've got that on order. I think with some of the shipping issues on the West Coast and whatnot, I've had a few things that just get delayed a couple of weeks for when I get them. And it may just be that some of this I ordered a little late, too. So it may be on me. But that's one of the ones that I've got on order. It just didn't come this week. I've only got like two or three other things like that. But like I got two issues of Wolverines this week, 6 and 7. Haven't read either yet. Like I said, behind.
New issue Planet was really good. Issue 3, I'm really liking that. Especially it's just single. It's really rewards the single issue reader. It's got a lot of extra cool stuff in it. A lot of good back matter. Some cool fake ads in there that I just really enjoy the whole total package. It's really makes it worth the single issue experience, which is getting fewer and fewer and far between for that. I enjoyed the final issue of Moon Knight in Brian Wood's run anyway. I think that was his last one. He seemed to tidy that storyline up, and I believe we get Colin Bunn as the creator on the next issue. I'm not sure if that's changed, but I think that's the case. But I thought it ended nicely, and what else was good? Oh, Miles Morales was good over at Marvel. I enjoyed that.
I've got both the Moon Knight and the Miles. Haven't read those yet. Looking forward to them, though.
Yeah, Magneto is also good over there. What else was good? I'm still enjoying Infinite Crisis. Still glad that you got me on that, because I've really been enjoying that one.
Cool.
It's a nice 1-2 punch with Injustice, I think.
I'm surprised both of those came out in the same week. And it was just a week ago that we got the previous Injustice Year 3.
Yeah.
So some of these are coming up pretty fast. And then there was also another Sensation Comics this week.
Yeah, it's weird, the timing.
Well, I mean, they triple up or whatever on the digital first this week at DC. We get all new Captain America, all new Captain America Fear Him, and Captain America and the Mighty Avengers over at Marvel. It's like, you know, spread some of this out a little bit, guys. Just kind of weird.
If anybody could afford to do that, it would be a big two, I would think. Publisher, it's not as dependent on that cash flow, that I would think they would be able to say, you know what, it makes more sense for fans of these stories to get them in, you know, a week at a time and not all bunched up together.
Mm-hmm.
So it always surprises me when they do things like that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a reason for it, but particularly with the digital first, it just seems a little odd because, I mean, it's not like they're just now getting the content or something. They've had it, or I don't know. Maybe the digital first got a little behind, but, you know, it's all good.
Yeah.
Got the last issue of Twilight Zone that kind of tied everything together or whatnot. I think it tied it together okay.
What issue was that?
12.
So is that the same story from the one that we began? It was still continuing?
Yes and no. They basically did one with the guy who escaped his life or whatever. They told another one about a worker, like a waitress at a local coffee shop or whatever, who could like see the future or whatever. And then they told another one about a guy who was investigating a mysterious death or whatever in the past. All of those tie together and intertwine or whatnot at the end. So it was sort of three different stories that weren't totally different or totally separate. And that kind of sort of didn't totally work for me. But it was like an attempt to take what could have been three miniseries, distinct miniseries, and intertwine them a bit to justify doing a 12-issue series. And it was meant to be that way from the beginning, I'm certain. But this is one of those cases where Straczynski came across as trying to be a little more clever than I felt he needed to be. He's a really solid writer, and when he tries to look at all this planning I've done or whatever, or I'm smart, there comes a point where his writing comes across like he's trying to convince me he's smarter than I am.
Yeah.
And he doesn't need to. He's smart, and he's a brilliant storyteller. Just tell a story. Don't get all fancy and highfalutin on us. But, you know, that's just me. So, yeah. Oh, did you read Multiversity Mastermen?
No, not yet.
Okay, I'm curious what you think of that one. I'll be honest, I was a little, I liked it, but the focus was where I should have expected it to be. It was not where I wanted it to be. How about that?
Oh, okay.
I was expecting a little more Freedom Fighters than we got, but, you know, so be it. Let's see, we've got the preview spotlight deadline coming up. That's going to be March 7th. So that's not too far away. The solicits are all online. Previews should be coming out on the 25th. So by the time this episode goes up, it's already out. So you've got, you know, all week to kind of go through that, figure out your picks, and send in some clips. There's tons of stuff between Convergence, between what's going on over at Marvel and stuff. I'm expecting lots of clips in the next couple of months, just because so much is happening at all the publishers. Exciting time to be reading comics.
Yeah, with the last couple of online solicits are all up now, and the forum's kind of been heating up with some of the new solicits that are out there and things coming up, and you know the number of $4.99 books from Marvel was kind of a surprise in their online solicits. I was, you know, saddened by the number of books that they were putting at the $4.99 price point. I'll be anxious to see if that upsets a lot of readers, or they just buy it and swallow it and take it and go forward. I don't know. I'll be interested to see how that plays out.
I think it's a risky move for them to make right now, particularly going into Secret Wars with what seems to be the promise of major changes during and coming out of Civil War. And as I forget who pointed out, they've got the digital comics online possibility. So for what, $8 a month or whatever, if you're willing to be 6 months behind.
All for Marvel Unlimited, yeah.
Yeah, for the Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited. You could just read everything that way. And a number of the people on the forum are.
Yeah, I was surprised how many of the folks, our listeners, are doing that. And they're okay with being 6 months behind. And I don't know how they don't get spoiled on books by us, but I guess by the time it comes out on Marvel Unlimited, they will have forgotten those spoilers.
Or they could just be 6 months behind on the podcast. We do everything as it's released week by week.
That's true.
So it sounds like this week, if they were listening to the episode that covered August 27th, I think it is.
It'd be fresh in their mind.
Of last year? Exactly. So that would be issue or episode 368 of the Weekly Comic Spotlight. So, you know, we're there for them. Or we were there for them, or we will have been there for them. I don't know. This whole time travel thing gets confusing.
It's like that book from Dark Horse.
Exactly, exactly. And we're a podcast. I can't tell what color this word is, you know?
What I thought was interesting, too, was that DC kind of, with their advance books, that some of those 24 new titles that they're launching, I guess about half of those are still going to be $2.99. coming out of their side of that side of convergence. So I think that's an interesting difference, a huge distinction between a company that is cranking books up to $4.99, in some cases $5.99, and another book that is another company that's putting them out at $2.99. You're almost at half in some cases. And
yeah,
that I would like to see how that plays out. That's kind of an interesting thing that's happening in the industry, and I don't know if it's going to have any effect, the effect that I want it to have, at least on sales. Folks could just, you know, it's their Marvel books and they have to have them, so they're going to pay $4.99 and they're not going to blink.
I think either publisher, Marvel or DC, right now doing major price increases is playing with fire. Both of them sales are not where they ought to be. Both of them has major shakeups coming out just to, hey, can we keep readers interested? And comics are expensive. Making them more expensive just doesn't make sense. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, on the one hand, it's tempting to say, well, Marvel can do it because they just sell better, but they're not selling that much better these days, if at all, in some cases.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a huge gap.
Yeah. When you've got a lot of your books in the 50,000 or under range, it's not a strong enough footing to say, yep, let's go $4.99, let's go $5.99. The digital inclusion stuff, that I don't think that's a advantage or really playing out for them well. I think DC's making the smarter move, not including the digital, keeping the price point down and going that way. But like I said, tons of interesting stuff coming out, a lot of good discussions on the forum.
Looking forward to that preview spotlight to kind of highlight. There's so much to highlight, you know, coming out. So I'll be anxious to see what everybody's talking about.
I've actually still got to make my picks and get those into DCBS before they put the new order form up. So that's probably what I will be doing this evening after we finish recording. So with that, you got anything else? Does that do it?
That'll do it.
Cool. Join us next week for Effigy number 2 from DC, Spider-Gwen number 1 from Marvel, and Orphan Black number 1 from IDW. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.